guy standing right behind me, and I'm like, "What's up?" I'm like, "Are you gonna like stand outside the door?" He's like, "No, I'm gonna be in the room with you. Like, I'm gonna watch you sleep."
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Bad Times Good Stories podcast, where each week I talk with a different guest about an awkward, embarrassing, or straight up bad time from their life that they're able to laugh about and have hopefully processed. My name is Joe Flanders, and this week on the show is Jason Serino. He is a pretty prolific content creator. He's dabbled in pretty much everything. You can check out jasonserino.com to see what I'm talking about. We also go into detail about some of the stuff he's got going on. But the two main topics of conversation are, one, the fact that Jason grew up a bastard. His dad was not in his life. And sort of, we talk about the effect that had on him as a young kid, and specifically the moment that led to him being incredibly embarrassed, but also the sort of happy ending, and the fact that he and his dad reconnected when Jason was 18, and it turns out he had a whole other family waiting for him. He's got a bunch of half-siblings and step-siblings that he just considers family. And yeah, it's a pretty cool how it all worked out, but definitely some awkwardness and embarrassment and shitty feelings when he was a kid about all that. And then we talk about one of the dumber choices that Jason made in his life, specifically at a high school anti-drug leadership conference where Jason did drugs. He talks about getting high at an anti-drug leadership conference in high school, and it's really funny, and the ramifications of it are kind of silly. It's just, it's a lot of fun. This episode's a lot of fun, so I hope you enjoy it. If you do, give us that 5 stars on iTunes. We are up to like 68 or 69 reviews. Amazing. Let's get to 70. Thank you to Rob Morris Yo and to Little Car 08. Much appreciated. Thank you so much for the nice words. It's not like I'm just looking for an ego trip. It's just, it's more about, you know, let me know what you're doing when you listen to the show. And if you enjoy it, I don't need to hear about myself. It's just nice to know that people are listening and enjoying the show. So let's get to 70 before next week. How about that? Anyway, you can check out badtimesgoodstoriespod.com for past episodes, merch, and a link to that Patreon page if you'd like to support me and the show. And you can email me at badtimesgoodstoriespodcast@gmail.com. That's all I've got for now. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Jason Serino.
So how's life? How's your morning been?
Not bad, man. Light traffic getting over here, which is always good.
Very nice.
Showed about 10 minutes ahead of what Google Maps said it would take. So
that is always a victory.
It is.
10 minutes is epic.
Yeah,
I'm usually happy if it's like 2 minutes.
It was a 30-minute drive. Got here in 20. Wow. Yeah. No Waze. None of that. I don't even know how that stuff works, but whatever the default map is.
Waze is just the fucking... It's just left turns. It's left turns onto busy roads all the time.
Yeah.
And I won't do it.
That's wild. Yeah. So it was nice, dude. Yeah, nice drive. Got up, made sure my story was somewhat made so much sense. I think it does.
Thank you.
Bare my heart to you
in advance.
You know, I didn't try to sound not pretentious, if that's possible.
If that's possible, yeah. I don't know. So you've I've known you for a number of years. I haven't seen you in a number of years as well.
True.
But you're pretty prolific in putting work out there. What's the dad's thing?
Dads in Parks.
Okay.
It's my buddy Jamie Kaler used to sit in the park with his comedian friends and improv buddies, and they would watch their kids at the park, and then they would riff jokes back and forth, like, you know, to kind of spitball stuff, come up with ideas, and they're like, why don't we just bring a camera? So I just come off this Drowny series I did called Cooking for Dads, about a divorced dad that's life's falling apart, so he decides to make a cooking show in the middle of it. Very dark and satirical, and kind of, you know, about self-involved or kind of self-inflicted wounds, you know. So I was coming off that dad project, and I did his podcast on, I think it was back in the, he was on Sirium or one of the XM things, and we hit it off. We did one, did really well, and now I've done 118 episodes.
Wow.
It plays before. If you go to the movies early, before the trailers, you'll see, we have episodes that run there. So we're
in what theaters?
It's half the cinemas in America. You can go on. I think it's screenvisions.com. You can look at a map and they'll show you. Here in town, I think it's the Arclight. I know it's been in the Man's Chinese Theater because people have sent me photos.
That's cool, man.
So yeah, we're 20,000 cinema screens. So not theaters, but screens themselves. Yeah. So it's cool. We just did a live PD parody with Carlos Ellis Rocky from Reno 911 and Rocco's Modern Life called, it was live parenting. So like we're at a same thing, live PD set up. We sent out to the hub to the parents who are in the middle of parenting. So it came out pretty well. That's in theaters right now. And yeah, man, just keep going to movies so people so they'll have a reason to ask us for more videos. But it's crazy, like when we did, like when Star Wars like came out, like one December, like we had our social media went through because everyone was going to the movies. So now the summer's picked up. We're excited to be back there. And yeah, it's like every other month we have something that plays in theaters, which is kind of cool. So
what is it, like 5 minutes or less? Or?
They're pretty quick. Yeah, this last one was, I think they gave, they're like, I'm like, what's the time limit? They're like, oh, like 90 seconds. I'm like, how about a minute and 55? They're like, well, what if it's good? Yeah, so they turn it in. They liked it. So yeah, it's been fun, man. We're doing that. And that's opened the door in a lot of the TV stuff. Those doors repeatedly get slammed in our face, but then another one opens up. So it's been a fun, I'm in the game. That's all I wanted to ever do is kind of be in that. And that's what we're doing. So can't complain.
No. Well, you can if you want to.
Yeah, no, I do. No, I do all the time, brother. No, let me tell you.
Well, so I'm excited. We kind of came up with a theme on the spot of things we can control and things we can't control.
Absolutely.
Everything that you just mentioned, things you can't control, you're creating your own career, which is really awesome. But I guess there's a question, or I don't know what the word would be, shitty situation, questionable.
It's just not traditional. Let's say
so I guess there is a non-traditional situation you could not control that you're going to dive into.
Yeah. So I thought about all the, I mean, I've definitely been through some bad stuff and some of it is not, it's darker than other stuff, but I think we're at all kind of the origin of any pain. I'm not really, I don't want to say it like that, but there was definitely something I overlooked. I was thinking about stuff and I was like, wait a minute, I grew up a bastard. Like,
really?
Yeah. So in a small town too. So I think it's different maybe if you're in a big city and you can like get around and, it's not so tight knit, but like everyone knows I grew up in a town of like 800 people.
Oh, so everyone knew your situation.
Yeah. So I was like I was the best. Well, there was more than one. I'm sure there was a few, there's a lot of wedlock kids all the time. But yeah, so at some point, like at an age, you realize you watch TV and you're like, wow, most, other kids don't live with their grandparents and their mom, other kids have a dad. And I kind of knew things were different. Like they weren't the way that other people grew up. But I didn't think like it was bad or I was, until I got to school.
Okay.
And then you start to meet other kids and you realize like they're like, what's your dad do? And I couldn't, be like, I'd make stuff up. Like he's a barge worker and they'd be like, oh, okay. Or like, he's a truck driver.
Were there a fair number of barge workers in your area?
There is the most random loss of lie ever. There is the Illinois River. So yeah, that's the thing. So one kid was like, it's like, oh, my dad works on a barge. Which one? Oh. And I was like, the one that goes west, I didn't know what
west barge.
And my father's in the arts. He's a singer, so he's done mostly like Broadway type stuff and also some rock and roll back in the day. He was in a rock band and stuff. So but when you're in the Midwest and you don't want to say like, oh, he sings show tunes, so he was an opera singer. So I grew up thinking my father was like which he does like some opera stuff, but he's not like
so did you know that then, like who he was and what he did?
Yeah, anytime I had a question, my mom would answer it, but when I got to school is when I first kind of like, and I was kind of like, I think I was like, I don't care, whatever he does, like, it doesn't matter to me. It's me and my mom, like it's kind of, us against the world type thing. And also my, relatives, uncles and aunts and stuff helped out. I had uncle that would drive me to basketball practice, like an aunt that would pick me up and take me back. My grandma was one of those babysitting grandmas. So mm-hmm. When you're at work, she would, watch the kids. She loved it, loves all the grandkids, but it definitely helped. It took a village. My mom worked full time. She ended up going back to school, went to college and now works in HR, has for years, doing really well. But when you get to school, like I had a friend named Kevin and I remember him probably in kindergarten is like, why don't you have a dad? And I was like, I remember too, like it also is kind of the genesis of my bullshitting, like being, yeah. I was like, well, lots of kids don't have dads. I mean, you've seen, there's other people that don't have dads. It's not a weird thing, but it is statistically, yeah. It's not, probably maybe even more common now, but yeah, so it felt like those questions kind of started to pique my, like, oh, maybe I'm not, maybe this is different. And it didn't really, once you get to school, you hit that. And then I would tell these kids, my dad works in a barge or whatever. And they would come back like, no, I talked to my mom. Like, your mom and dad were never married and your dad lived in California. And
what are these kids' fascination with your living situation?
Well, because they caught me in a lie. They're their parents knew my mom. They knew the situation. They were old. They lived in town, in a small town. So they all knew that my dad wasn't a barge worker. So I was like, yeah, so that was the first part where, and once I found out, like I asked my mom and, my mom's a great lady. She taught me, music, how to throw a baseball, she was like my mom and my dad kind of put together.
Yeah.
And she told me the one thing I always remember, which is actually pretty poignant. Especially when you're a kid, she said, you're an accident, not a mistake. So I took that to be like, oh, there's happy accidents. Yeah, it can be, I wasn't planned, but that's okay. You get to school and, you start hitting those things. And it didn't really land on me until they had this thing at school called Bring Your Dad to Lunch Day. Oh. So, and I thought, I'm like, maybe I dreamed this. Maybe it wasn't real. Maybe it was like Bring Your Parent to Lunch Day. And I looked it up and they still do this at schools all across the country. Yeah. It's like Bring Your Dad. It must be a Friday before a holiday weekend, like before Casimir Pulaski Day or something in Illinois.
Yeah.
And so I remember that day coming and dreading it because my mom had to work, couldn't get off. My uncle's an aunt. No one could come and kind of hang with me. So I went out to lunch and there I am like by myself, thinking like, wow, it was so embarrassing. I remember being that kid. I think it was probably second grade.
I was going to ask. Yeah.
Second or third, something like that. I think it was right around there. And I remember it was like, looking like at the lunch, when you go to the lunchroom and you're looking for a place to sit and there's all the cool kids, it's kind of like that times 1,000. I was like, wow, I am different. I am kind of inadequate, in a way, cause I don't have a father who's here. Luckily my friend Kevin, who was there with his father, Tim, they let me sit with him. But that 30 seconds that I was, whatever it was, it felt like it was forever. Yeah. So if you're out there, people that are administrators in schools, let's cancel this. Bring your dads.
I'm shocked in like the day and age that we live in now that they wouldn't just make it parent day.
Yeah.
Because there's so many divorce. Like there's now even more so than then. There's so many like single parent situations.
And also that like there's kids that are raised by their uncles and aunts or their grandparents. Why not make it just family day?
Yeah.
Because every kid has a family. Let's say every kid has a family, for the most part. So it was rough, but I remember hearing that, when people used to say the word bastard, it would really kind of get under my skin. Yeah. I'd say, hey, what's that word mean? And they'd say, it means you don't have a father. I was like, no, everyone has a father. It means that your parents weren't married, Mm-hmm. And then the other word is illegitimate. Which isn't much better.
No, it's not.
As a kid, you want to feel legitimate. You want to feel like you're, you're your own self and a person.
In a way, I'd say it's even worse because there's no old, dirty, illegitimate. There is an old, dirty bastard. At least bastard kind of, you have a chip on your shoulder, kind of cool.
Yeah.
Illegitimate just sounds terrible.
Yeah, it sounds like it sounds like you don't belong. Like you're not, if a game is like, a match doesn't count. The soccer game doesn't.
You cheated, so it's illegitimate.
I was a little sketchy on that word. When people would say it, I kind of challenged them on it, even like when I was in junior high or high school. And then I kind of got cooler. Like I use it now all the time. Mm-hmm. It is a word, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
I've definitely used it. I've written it and things. But like by the time I got to college, my buddy Jake would introduce me. It's like, this is Jason Serino, the bastard son of an opera singer. And they'd be like, oh, really? And they talk. And
that's a conversation starter.
It's something. Yeah. Three out of 10 girls might have, taken notice. The other seven, like, so what? Who cares?
Yeah, right.
Why were your parents married? I think over. So at first it is that when you're growing up and you think I'm different or I don't fit in. There is that, you know, that one moment stuck out to me, like being like it, I was so embarrassed. I was like shook, you know, I was almost like in shock. Like, what do I do? And luckily I had, my friend's dad was there. His name was Tim. Great guy. And then unfortunately, a few years later, as my mom was getting married to my stepfather, my friend Kevin's father, Tim, died in a car accident.
Oh.
So I thought it was really unfair that here I am, you know, never really wanting a dad,
right.
Like never asking for one and getting one. And then he lost like the best dad ever, like in the same year. So it was rough. But his name was Tim Walsh. Great guy. He's been gone for almost 22 years probably. But I won't forget, you know, that day where he helped me out. Like he saved the little bastard kid roaming around the field, you know, with his sack lunch. He'll always have it. And even now, like when I write, I'll write characters. A lot of times, like character names don't matter. You know, like it's like whatever, Veronica. Who cares? Yeah. You've never met a Veronica, but you're a writer. And so I always try to slip a Tim Walsh in there whenever I can when it's a good character, someone that you know might not be a central character, but I try to put that in. So
no, I did the same thing. I wrote a horror film that's out now, and there's a professor character, so I named him Professor Crawford after my mentor from college, Wayne Crawford.
Nice.
He wrote Valley Girl.
That
was his big claim to fame.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, he passed away a couple of years ago, and the guy playing this character was Todd Rundgren, the musician.
Oh,
so it was pretty cool.
Nice,
like,
hell yeah.
And, you know, he's referenced somebody, a character in the movie says, Professor Crawford, what do you think? And I'm like, yeah, Wade, hopefully that makes you proud.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. No, it's little things like that that I think they're cool and no one else will really care, but
exactly.
You know, it's, those who do will be like, ah, cool, man.
Exactly. Well, to track... So when the kid called you out for lying, like you mentioned, like what was your reaction?
I must have rolled with it, man. I've always been kind of quick-witted, I think. I won't say I was living a lie,
right.
But I was definitely lying to people about what my father did and where he was.
Did you have any relationship with him growing up? When did you meet him?
So when I turned 18, I reached out to him and I said, hey, I'm going to college next year and I want to meet my dad.
Yeah.
So that happened. I flew out, met him. I found out I had two half-sisters.
Wow.
That are now 20 years old in college. Hello, Bridget and Charlotte, if you're hearing this. They're on full rides at their school, so we're very proud of them. And then I also have a younger sister, Natalie, that's 14. So I've got three half-sisters. I've been going there for Christmas because the kids are younger. I wanted to, I've been spending a lot of holiday time in California. Now, my family are all older, and my mom's side and my stepbrothers, or I just call them brothers. They're my bros. They're all spread out across the country for the most part. So it's tough. We don't really get back there as one group a lot, but I wanted to be there for my sisters as they, you know, for Christmas and their birthdays and stuff.
Sure.
And they live up in the Bay. So it's a 5-hour drive. It's not too bad.
Not bad.
I reached out to him. Then after I did that, I realized I had this whole, you know, he's got like 12 brothers and sisters. Uh-huh. So I had all these other aunts and uncles that I'd never met, you know, before that, like, an hour away from me. So I got to meet them, and now I've kind of got both sides of my family are filled up. So
yeah, it seems like people that are in the situation that you are either want nothing to do with the estranged parent or very much would like to meet them. So was it something where growing up, did you want to meet him before you were 18, or was it kind of just out of sight, out of mind? Was there any hostility towards him for not being in the picture? Like,
No, I mean, I'm sure deep down there was probably some like, you know, you didn't think I was good enough, you know, something like that. Some weird kid thing, but not so much in the front of my brain. I was kind of like, nah, it's me and my mom against the world, you know? I wasn't really looking. I had male role models, you know. I had an uncle that my Uncle Jerry, me and him played basketball every day after school, and you know, so I had a family dynamic there. It just wasn't the traditional one, so it was never like it was missing from my life.
Yeah,
I do think like maybe I should have fought more when I was a kid, or been a little tougher. You know, maybe that would have been, you know, having a dad to show me how to throw a punch or something like that, you know, how to kick some ass.
Yeah.
That's what we really want from our dad.
Show
me how to fight people.
Dad. I had a dad. He never taught me how to kick anybody's ass, right? And I regret it every day.
Or at least take a punch, you know, show me how to.
But I never,
because I didn't know anything else, you know. I didn't
right.
know if I yeah. would have had a dad and I would have been five when, you know, and he would have taken off or would have split up, it would have would have been different, but that's all I ever knew. So, and also it made me very self-sufficient. I had to get up. There's a certain point in my life. My mom got up for work before I left for school. So like when I was in, you know, like second grade, I was making myself breakfast and getting up in the morning. And like, I, you know, like not like an adult, but like a lot of kids don't have to, you know, because if I didn't get up and miss the bus, I wasn't going to school that day. There was no mom like hitting me over the head, like get on the bus. So it made me kind of independent. And I didn't, I didn't think like I didn't feel like I was missing anything really. Although maybe I was, maybe I'm not, I'm still not complete. Nah, I'm all right.
But it's cool that, you know, that there wasn't any, that you did want to meet him.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of curiosity.
Sure. Yeah.
And then once I found out that I had sisters, like they're my only blood relatives. I have four stepbrothers and then, and at the time two sisters. I was like, I definitely want to be a part of this. I want to, you know my sisters, and they are like, they're the sweetest, nicest, also like the most talented like singers in the world. So
great.
We're very much, both sides of my family are very musical. I just saw my sister Bridget was Belle and Beauty and the Beast. So I got to go up in college and see her. And she got that role as a sophomore. I'm like, I bet all the girls hate you.
Yeah.
All those upperclassmen girls are so upset at you right now. And that's honestly my favorite role, you know, family wise. I think I'm an okay son, I'm an okay brother. I'd say I'm a pretty good brother. Being their big bro, and there's such an age difference. Like I'm 21 years older than my sisters and 23 years older than I'm 18 years older than my oldest sisters and 23 years older than my youngest sister.
Yeah.
So like there's one time when their stepmom and I were walking with them and they go, oh, like they thought that me and her were a couple. And she thought it was the best. She's like, oh no, he's actually 20. He's my husband's son. You know, like, I started as an only child, as a bastard. And now I'm the oldest of eight kids.
Wow.
So between my apps and my steps.
That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, it all worked out, man. In the end, it's definitely unique, but I wanted to get it out too, because I think there's a lot of kids that are in that situation or a situation like it, a non-traditional kind of family, raised by their mom or a dad or an uncle or an aunt or a grandparent or a foster parent, you know? Mm-hmm. I just want to say, I see you. And you know, you're not alone. That's not a unique experience. You might not see it in like TV and media and, you know, stuff like that or movies, but, there's definitely, we're all out here. There's a lot of legitimate, illegitimate kids in the world.
For sure. Yeah. Well, everything you said, leads me to believe you're just an upstanding citizen. Does no wrong, but apparently, you got yourself into some, hot water.
Well, like I said, the first, this is one of my, this is an all time bonehead story. It's famous. If people knew, well, it's not a lot of people know about it because it was kept under wraps. Yeah. And I'll get into some of the politics of it later. But as I said, growing up in Illinois, you know, there wasn't in Mazan, where I'm from, it's 800 people. You know, you have to drive to the next town to go to Walmart. You have to, you know, there's not a lot going on. I mean, it's a great, and I love the people there, but you know, if you didn't have a bicycle and like five friends, you're going to be bored. You know, there wasn't a lot going on. Couldn't see the theater. I couldn't go to an improv show. So we partied. Now I had grown up, kind of a chubby kid. That's another reason probably why I wanted to be funny or entertain people. I wanted to fit in cause I was a little fat ass.
Me too.
me too. But then, so I went to this small school, my mom got married. I went to Joliet, Illinois for a year. Went to school there. My sophomore year in high school, I played sports, and the whole time I was playing guitar. I wanted to, like, my guitar became like my, it was basketball, football, and then guitar was the one that was year round. I was playing guitar. I wanted to get really good. My mom was in a band, you know, I knew a bunch of guitar players. And I also thought, I don't think I was in it like for the girls at first, but you realize like, oh wait, like this is definitely, it puts sure. me up a step. If you can sing and play guitar at the same time, like that's when you get like, they start like, oh, he sings and plays at the same time. Like that's
multi-talented.
This is a good little eighth grade guitar player here. I became the guitar playing kid. I was the one, I wasn't super great. I played mostly rhythm cause you can't really play lead and sing at the same time. Some people can, I can't. But I was doing like Tom Petty songs and stuff like that. started writing my own, but I kind of got this, and because I went back to my original high school from Joliet, I kind of got like that, people thought I had that big city vibe. Now Joliet's like 100,000 people.
Sure.
And it's also like the people from the city, when they talk about rednecks, they talk about Joliet. And right. Here we are thinking that Joliet's like, it's got a mall. That's the city. You know, like that's like a,
you've made it.
Yeah. We're in a suburb of a suburb of a suburb. But you know, so I come back and everyone, I can play guitar and sing, and everyone's like, you must smoke pot. And I didn't. And, but you start going to parties and you're around the campfire playing guitar, and my friends would do this thing where I would play and they would light the bowl for me while I played. And so I wouldn't have to take my hands off the guitar.
Parlor trick.
Yeah. So I did become that guy. I did become the kind of the affable pothead, kind of a, I like to bridge the gap between like the jocks, and we had these people called like the brick sitters, who are just people that sit on the bricks outside of school, you
the
know,
brick sitters.
Waiting for the school to start. Yeah. wearing JNCOs, you know, and as you do,
which apparently you're making a comeback.
Oh, thank God. Cause I got a lot in my closet that I've been waiting to pull out.
They've just been waiting. My girlfriend showed me, like, they have an Instagram page, and I think they've just been waiting for the 90s to come back, and now they totally are.
Oh,
so
my
like,
God.
We're ready for you.
Hell yeah, dude. Call it the Juggalos.
Get the Tamagotchis ready. anyway.
So I lived this kind of dual life. I was, all my friends kind of knew I was now I'm smoking pot, playing guitar. I'm the, you know, chill guy. But in school, they still think of me as like Jason, the, you know, the president of the art club and the president. I was like president of 9 clubs. I just wanted to be out of school as much as possible.
Me too.
So here I am, like, you know, I'm cool with like my favorite people in school are the lunch ladies. So I'm hanging out with the lunch ladies. I'm that guy. But I'm also like, you know, getting stoned before school every day and just like walking in, like no one, probably the teachers don't have good weedar because I was high all the time and no one knew. So this opportunity comes for this leadership conference. They want to send like one kid from each school in the county to this leadership conference sponsored by Drug Free America.
Great.
What's the worst that could happen? And all my friends are like, you know, dude, you're going to bring weed and you're going to get everyone high, aren't you? And I'm like, actually, I'm not, because that'd be stupid.
Yes.
I'm not going to bring marijuana to, and also I was sponsored by the state's attorney's office.
Oh.
So who
Let's
I also
keep this above board.
Yeah. So I'm like, you know, so I'm like, you know, I'm not going to do that. That would be a foolish mistake. So I'm just going to go there. I'm not even bringing my guitar. I'm not even in party mode, guys. I'm going to go learn. And I went to this, it's called Knox College in Galesburg, Illinois. Little small 2000 person school. And they had, you know, and they invite kids that are like 4-H kids. Like they're not like at risk youths. And they invite all these like good kids to see like pictures of homicide scenes and like, and listen to ex, you know, cons talk about drugs and, you know, and these, it's like, kind of like preaching to the choir, you know?
Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
So, but it's, you know, and someone's making a lot of money cause it's a big, it's like, you know, 2000 kids are there and it's, you know, so there's, you know, people are in it for the right and wrong reasons, I'm sure. But it, I got the vibe, even when I got there, that it was a bunch of people also who were like fulfilling like court mandated like volunteer work.
Okay, like, sure.
Yeah. Like some of the guys look like they might, like they could have been high too, you know. but they bring you in and they tell you all these stories about you know, all the stuff they did. Like they, one guy was like an NFL player and he got drunk and his buddy was riding on the hood of his car. Not an NFL player, he was destined for the NFL, and his buddy was surfing on the top of his car. They got an accident, his buddy died. He didn't get in trouble because he was a star football player, and like his life, just a bunch of that, people making excuses for him, and then he ends up at rock bottom. And then we hear that story for like 45 minutes and we're like, well, I'm not doing heroin, you know, like these kids, there was no risk of them at, like these were the, you know, like I said, 4-H kids. So we do that, and then I hear about there's going to be a talent show. And it's pretty boring. Like you're sitting through these workshops and stuff. And I'm like, well, I don't have my guitar. So, you know, what are you going to do? And then I see a kid playing in the guitar, not very well, like across the way. And I'm like, hey, can I borrow that tonight? I want to play a song at this talent show. And he's like, sure, I guess, you know, being a 4-H kid, nice kid, doesn't want to say no to a stranger. Sure. So I had a few songs when I was in high school. One was called Worst Things in Being Blind, a very like sappy 17-year-old 4-chord song. And then the other one was called the Jennifer Love Hewitt song, or Ode to Jennifer Love Hewitt. which is it, I wrote it from my little brother's perspective. He was and actually looking back now, it's smarter than I realized, because I took Jennifer Love Hewitt's career and then made jokes out of the, you know, names of video or movies she was in and stuff right. like that. So, but the idea was that it's a sweet love song, and then it has a dark underbelly at the end that comes out, because everyone that's obsessed with these sex symbols, it's like, oh, she's so pretty and so cute. My little brother did like kind of like, not verbatim, but he was like, oh, you know, I love her. And he's like, I'd love to, you know, blank her in the blank.
Yeah.
And he was like 5 years, you know, maybe 6 years old. And his defense, he probably heard that from me and my friends. Yeah. But I wrote that song like in a like 20 minutes, I wrote the words and to most of it. And it was like my closer all through college. People wanted to hear it, but I don't know if they ever got the satire of it or what it was really about. But, so I'm like, I'm going to play this song. So I play the song. And it's like, you know, first time I saw you on Party of Five, I wanted to be Bailey Salinger, but I never cheat on you and I never drink and drive. Like, all, you know, relates to her career and stuff. And it goes great, like standing ovation. Like, and that's like one of the first times too where I've been like, oh man, applause feels good. You know, wow, that's, you know, that's a powerful feeling. So I play the song. It's great. I'm like, there's like one blonde girl that's really pretty, and another brunette, kind of more tougher chick, and they're both like into me. And I had been a chubby kid my whole life. So once I kind of hit high school, I grew up a little bit, you know, had a growth spurt. So I started to look like, you know, non plus size person in high school. So I wasn't used to that much attention. I'm riding high. And anytime I've ever done something really dumb, it's been like, you know, like, oh, I feel real good. Like, let's go do this. And then something, you know, like it's always self-inflicted. So I'm walking back to the dorms they have a stay in. And this, I get this, like, hey, you know, I hear it from around me, and this, we'll call him Trey. Let's say his name was Trey.
Great.
City kid, you know, one of those kids in high school that's like, you know, built like a man, like he's been lifting weights every day for, you know, short little haircut, wearing like mesh shorts, you know, basketball. I think I'd seen him, we played basketball at the thing before, at the conference. They had like a, you know, free time and stuff.
Yeah.
And he goes, hey man, he goes, you smoke? And I was like thinking, like, this is, you know, who is this guy first? He's a little bit older than me. He's a few years older.
Yeah.
Is he a narc? And I to this day, I still say the same thing I did that day. I was like, well, you got some? And he's like, man, I could tell you smoked the second you started playing that guitar. I could tell you were a smoker, dude. I'm like, oh my God. Like, if you can tell, then what about these other people?
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
So I say, I'm like, yeah, you know, I do. He's like, well, if we can find something to smoke, like, we'll be good to go. So I do the old pop can trick, you know, take a pop can, put holes in it. And we smoke. And first night, as you know, we were chilling. He's a cool guy. I'm like, hey, thanks, man. I go back to the dorm. And there's this kid staying with me who's a few years younger than me. We'll call him Ben, just for the sake of the story. And if there's a hero of the story, it's Ben.
Okay, Ben.
I owe him my life.
Where did you and this guy smoke?
Just out on the campus, like around like bushes and stuff. And then, yeah. Which is also like, here I am thinking like, he's like, like, I'm smoking weed at college. Like, no, people in college don't smoke on the ground. You know, you're not in college smoking. You go to your dorm or your room.
Right, exactly.
So I hear it, I'm like, dude, I'll be doing this in 2 years when I go to school, you know, at Northwestern, whoever I plan to go when I was there. So we smoke, come back in, and Ben smells something. And his curiosity is piqued. And it's like, Jason, what is, like, are you on drugs? And I'm like, honestly, dude, like, I smoked a little marijuana. Okay. It's not a big deal. And he starts to get like real inquisitive about it. He wants to know about weed. So it's almost like I'm teaching him. So I'm laying there in bed high, and I'm like, yeah, you can, there's like indica, which makes you tired, and sativa. And I'm telling this, like, you know, 12-year-old kid, the ins and outs of weed. And I'm like, but you shouldn't smoke it. You know, like, first of all, you're too young. Second of all, just, you don't want, you know, it wouldn't be good.
Yeah.
So next night comes along. I'm still like a high profile person at this leadership conference.
The Jennifer Love Hewitt guy.
Yeah. Like, oh my God, you really love her, don't you? You can look, that's on YouTube, by the way. I redid that video years later, but I gave myself a bowl haircut and made it look really weird. Cause I couldn't, it'd be weird to have a 30-year-old guy sing that song.
Right.
So yeah. I did like this channel takeover, Chad. It was Chad's summer, and I did it then, but you can look it up. Oh, the Jennifer Love Hewitt, or the Jennifer Love Hewitt song. You'll find it. So me and the guy, we smoked the next night. And it's our last night there. Right.
Yeah.
So we're hanging out, we're smoking, come back. I'm sitting there with Ben. We're just chilling. I'm telling him more about weed and how he shouldn't smoke it, but it's awesome. And I get a knock on the door. And so I'm like, you know, who's knocking? It's like, you know, probably it's 1 in the morning at this point. And I open the door. It's one of the ex-con guys, one of our chaperones. Yeah. And, he's like, hey, can we talk to you for a minute? And I look at Ben and he looks at me, and I'm like, oh shit. So I walk down and there's Trey, sitting there with all these other, sitting there with all these other, advisors, whatever you want to call them, these guys who are, doing their court appointed, community service.
Forced volunteering.
Yeah. And they're like, hey, we saw Trey in the hallway and he smelled like weed, and they look at me and I'm like, God damn it, Trey. Like, you're smoking what? Where? Like, what do you come on, man. Like, and they're like, and they look at me and they're like, he said he was smoking with you too. And I'm like, oh God. And at this point, whenever you're a kid and an authority figure comes at you, whether it's a police officer or a teacher, they know how that shit works. They know. So, but even then I was like, well, I mean, Trey's lying. I didn't smoke. And they're like, well, we think he did. And I'm like, why? Is that because you look high? I'm like, I'm not high. Imagine being a 16-year-old kid and telling I'm not high, guys, and being stoned off your ass, And they're just kind of shaking their heads like, dude, I've seen people high. We've been to prison, right? We've been around. So the sweat's beating down my face. Trey's crying. He's bawling his eyes out. And he has a good reason to cry, because it turns out that Trey's dad operates the largest rehab center in the Midwest. And not only that, but Trey is in charge of 20 kids, 10 to 12 year old kids who are there with him at the thing. So if he gets busted, he's in trouble with his dad, and these kids who he brought, who look up to him, mm-hmm. are going to be, you're supposed to be a leader. Yeah. Trey, what happened to you? So Trey is crying. And they're like, hey, we want to go up to your room. So they take me up to the room. Ben's there. And they start looking through my bags and stuff. Now, we had smoked out of that can, and like idiots, I brought the can with me.
Sure.
Because
let's bring the evidence.
We don't want to leave it out in the, we're probably thinking if we leave it outside and someone finds it,
DNA, the road would spot.
Yeah. So I picked the can and the little bit of pot. He gave me a little bit of weed and an cellophane, a lighter, and I put it in this soft suitcase in the middle of my clothes.
Yeah.
So they get up there and they're kind of they don't want to search my stuff because they're not sure if they can, type thing. And they're like, all right, well, he didn't smoke in the room. We determined that it doesn't smell like weed. And they look at Ben and he's like, was there anything going on here? He's like, no, God bless Ben's little heart. And I go to walk back out the door and I make eye contact with Ben, because Ben saw me put the stuff away. And I kind of give him I shoot my eyes at him. Yeah. Hey, one of those.
Keep your mouth shut.
So we go back downstairs now, and I'm just like, oh, Ben, Jesus, please help me here. You're my only hope. Trey's still crying, bawling his eyes out. Honestly, the bawling like the world's about to end, crying, which it might have been for him. And they asked me again. They're like, did you smoke with Trey? And I was like, and Trey's looking at me, shaking his head, please say yes. Please accept part of the burden, of us getting caught smoking marijuana. And I go, yeah, I smoked with them. And, I said it. Once you say it, you can't unsay it, right?
No.
And they kind of look like, yeah. And they look at me and they go, how often do you smoke marijuana? And I don't know it wasn't even quick thinking. It was just not an instinct. It can't be an instinct, but I was like, that was the first time I've ever smoked marijuana.
Oh,
so
it might even be worse for Trey.
So not only that, but now think about it. If you're the leadership conference, not that this kid was getting high at your conference. He came to your conference and got stoned for the first time.
Yeah, that's bad luck.
That's bad pub for you. Yeah. So it was good on 16-year-old me for saying that out loud. So then a rent-a-cop shows up, campus security, and the school's not in session. So this guy has the easiest job in the world. No one's
probably dying for something to do.
Yeah. So they, and I don't know if he's a cop or a regular cop. I just see the uniform and I'm like, oh shit, he's got pepper spray in his belt. I'm like, oh God, he's going to pepper spray my ass. So they go back into the room and he's like, well, if we have probable cause, if he admits to it, we can search, which I don't think, he's not even a cop. He probably can't even, but then you're on the school grounds. Who knows what the rules are?
Exactly.
So he goes to open up that soft suitcase and lifts it up, and he right into the part where I put the weed, opens it up, and it's empty.
Ben
had taken it. Now here's where it gets a little hairier. The cop goes and he's like, I think he knows something was in there. He can smell it, or whatever. There's some ash maybe in the bag that fell out.
He looks out the window and there's the pop can and the weed because Ben just took it and just tossed it out the window. So
the couple of great minds here.
Yeah. And Ben's like a third grader, dude. Oh, like sure. He don't know what's going on. He's like in, he's probably in fifth grade or something like that. But a great kid. And so the cop sees the pop can outside. I call it pop because I'm from Illinois.
Me too.
I think it was an RC Cola, if I remember that correctly. So a little crunched up RC can. He goes out there, finds it, brings it back upstairs. And now I'm like, oh my God, I just ruined Ben's life too. Cause they're going to know that, like, they're going to, what's going to happen. They're going to, can they figure out? Cause I think they might've done a perimeter sweep already when they came in, to like look for, so I'm like, oh no, Ben, I've ruined this kid's life. Yeah. Like he's gone from zero to like, a misdemeanor, misdemeanor offense in no time. So they bring, so the rent-a-cop comes back with all the guys, with the pop can. And he's like, well, there's looks like there's some residue, but not enough. You wouldn't be charged for it. So, I'm like, all right, well, am I free to go? And they're like, oh no, you can't leave. We need you to call your parents.
Oh.
So by now it's like 3 a.m, right? And my mom's married to my stepfather. So it's, they call the house and they say, and it's them on the phone first. And I'm like, I'm just waiting to hear my mom yell through the phone. I can hear her. Cause not that even that she was, my mom's like, I found her Cheech and Chong VHS tape on. She's like, she's not a weed smoker by any means, but she's not one of those people that think like weed's the devil. She's not gonna, she'd probably rather have me smoke than drink, for being honest. So they call and they say, we need you to come pick up your son in Galesburg, Illinois. And my mom's like, why? And they say, we caught him smoking marijuana here. And I hear a, what? Over the phone.
Oh, the worst feeling.
And then I hear her say, well, I'm not coming to pick him up. Like, well, I was not going to get up at 3 a.m. and do a 5-hour round trip, or a 4-hour round trip. So they put me, they're like, you need to talk to your mom. Like, they basically want me to convince my mom to come pick me up. And so I get on the phone. And also, I want to say, I should mention this. There was this, it was the beginning of summer. Like, school had just got out. This leadership conference was there. I didn't want to screw up. Also because this really cute girl, Heather from Vermont, spent summers in town and we've been talking on the phone and like, I'd been doing some work in there. So I was, cause like the summer was going to be, just me and Heather having a great time together.
Yeah.
So, so they call the mom, my mom, she's like, no, I'm not picking him up. They give the phone to me. I'm like, yeah, guys, she's not coming to get me. And I had given them when you get there, they make you give them your keys, your car keys and stuff too. So I'm kind of trapped. So they're like, all right. So they call up another security guard and they're like, he's going to escort you to this dorm off campus where you're going to sleep for the night. And I'm like, okay, cool. So he, brings me in. At this point, I know I'm screwed. Like, I just want to, I don't even want to go home, but I want to get it over with. Like, I wish I could just leave.
Right.
And I go to walk in the door and shut up behind me and the guy's standing right behind me. And I'm like, what's up? I'm like, are you going to like stand outside the door? He's like, no, I'm going to be in the room with you. Like, I'm going to watch you sleep. Like, he didn't say it like that. He's like, I'm going to be in the room within this dorm. Like, I'm not going to, and I'm like, why? He's like, in case you, something had you like overdosed or something like that. Cause they like the whole reason they said to my mom, like, you got to come get him. She's like, he can drive his ass home. They're like, he's under the influence of marijuana, ma'am. He cannot drive anywhere. So there I am. Sleeping in this room with the security guard I just met, watching me sleep. Like,
okay, that's fucking weird.
They didn't want me to overdose on the marijuana.
Do they understand marijuana?
Yeah. Or, and also, I feel like the windows too, like I was on the second floor. I couldn't have like got out. And if I got out, I had no car. What am I going to do? Like live on the street of Galesburg, Illinois. So that was a lot. I wake up in the morning and there's that guy staring at me like, hey, you snore. I'm like, thanks, bro.
Like, sorry.
Yeah, like so it happens when I'm high on marijuana, my body shuts down. I don't know how it works. So I wake up and then all the volunteers there, all the ex-cons, kind of escort me back to my truck. I have this F100 long bed white truck, right? So they all walk me and they're like, hey man, you're a really good musician, keep that up. You made a mistake today, don't let it define your life type thing. Gave me my car keys. And they go to like, I go to open the door and like a carton of cigarettes fall out of my car. I'm like, oops, well, it's not weed, right? So they put me in the truck. And so I had to do that 2-hour drive back to my hometown from Galesburg. And then on the way home, I had this, it was an old F-100 truck. It was a year older than I was. It was an 81 F-100. And it was starting to get a problem with overheating.
Yeah.
So on the way home, every 20 minutes it starts to overheat. I've had to stop at a gas station, wait for it to cool down, and then undo the antifreeze and like pour ice cold water into it because it's just burning through like everything. So I had to drive back home knowing that my summer was ruined, and then stop every 20 minutes because the truck was overheating. I called Heather on the phone. I said, hey, she's like, hey, are you going to meet me up? Like, oh, I'm getting in tonight. We should go out. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to go anywhere for a very long time. And by the time I was like, you know, I got grounded for a while. I had a job, so I couldn't really be grounded. But right. I think at the time I was like working at like Walmart or something, or maybe I was working at a flower shop. But my parents were kind of like, well, we can't like make you just stay home because you have to make money. So, so you can help us pay for your college, you know, like in a couple of years, basically. But by the time I had got ungrounded, Heather had, I think, fallen for another boy. I look back now, like, even saying that, like, I got busted for smoking weed at a leadership conference sponsored by Drug Free America. And now here's where it gets interesting. So not only the whole summer do I have to worry about it, but I got the state's attorney's office and my school,
right,
that so I'm going to go back and I'm thinking I'm not going to be able to be science club president anymore. You know, art club is gone.
Resigned in disgrace.
Yeah. So I get to school and the counselor who kind of sent me off, who actually went to school with my mom, I think too. One of the counselors was my mom's counselor. The other one went to school with my mom. So they both kind of knew, they knew the family as well. I get there on the first day of my, I think it was my, so it was my senior year. And they're like, so how was the conference? And I'm like, didn't you hear? And they're like, well, no, we're waiting to hear from you. And I was like, oh, it was great, you know? And it turns out that school, the conference, I can't remember, it was like the Illinois Leaders Association, or I forget what it was, but they knew that, like, I had become like too big to fail. Like, if,
really?
Cause I was the kid that played that, you know, played the song and the thing, and it made a big deal. But because of, and I think also me telling them it was my first time smoking.
Yeah.
Like, we don't want to publicize or, you know, let this be known that this kid smoked weed for the first time at this thing.
Very true.
And wow. Yeah. Instead of like just being a stoner that got high, like I was. So they didn't tell anyone.
Wow.
So I got to go back to school, and like some of my friends and stuff knew, but the school itself or the state's attorney's office never found out that I got busted there for smoking. It was not on my record or anything either, but, sure. I survived that. They kept it under wraps basically. So
I'm sure you were not invited back the next year.
I was not. No. Well, you remember it was funny. Like there was one guy who was kind of like a oafy, you know, kind of a, I don't want to say dumb, but you know, not the sharpest tool in the shed. And I remember when I was leaving, he was like, well, maybe next year you can come back and tell your story. I was like, your path is not for me, brother. I am not and I guess I am kind of doing what they're doing now, is to kind of warn people, I can't warn you of my stupidity, but right, I can warn you of, like, cause I was like feeling girls were paying attention to me for the first time. I'm riding high, and I was like, sure, I'll smoke weed at this, you know, whatever. I think it's important now to, obviously, if someone offers me weed now, I'll smoke it. I don't care. Sure. But at the time, being a kid, being at a place where you definitely shouldn't do that,
right?
It's like an all-time bonehead thing to do. So
I think the hope is as you get older, things like context come into play. Where it's like, maybe not here, where I am with who's sponsoring this event.
Oh, definitely. Like, especially I work with corporate sponsors a lot now. You know, I'm a hardcore sellout. There was a time in my life when, like, I was doing lots of with Funny or Die and like the YouTube channel, we were doing stuff all, and it was always racy, like never more than like PG-13, but some of the stuff went close to an R, and I always worried about like that corporate life versus the videos. And then one time I was in a meeting and the CEO of this company leans over, he goes, hey, I saw that pussyfoot video you did, hilarious. And I was like, oh. And then I kind of realized, like, they're hiring me maybe because of this stuff,
right?
And not despite, like, they've seen it, they can Google my name and see this stuff.
Right.
So I think I was maybe overly cautious a lot for some of that stuff, like in the corporate video kind of world, branding world. But yeah, also when you're just like day to day life, I think there's, I have friends that I maybe I'm too harsh on for that. It's like, dude, chill out. We're at a, you know, you're screaming at a Buffalo Wild Wings at 3 in the afternoon, you know, but yeah. Actually Buffalo Wild Wings, you're probably screaming anytime you wanted to.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is definitely, you know, your surroundings and, conscientious of other people, I think is a big thing. Like, you know, when I learned about like smoking cigars, I remember this guy, old guy taught me, he's like, you never smoke it so it's a nuisance to anyone else.
Right.
Like, if you're smoking it and someone else can, you know, smell it, doesn't like it, then you're not a gentleman, you know, gentlemen yeah. smoke cigars. So stuff like that, you know, I always want to make being a gentleman makes people, I think it means, making people feel as comfortable as possible
yeah.
at all times. So I try to be a good host and stuff. And, although I don't think you can expect that going to other places, cause sure. then that gives you, some expectations that aren't mm-hmm. going to be matched all the time, but yeah, just be a cool dude and be nice to people. And, yeah, don't be a dick. I think that's the best advice to give to people. Just don't be a dick.
Yeah. That's pretty much what I live by.
Yeah. Right? You're doing a good job, man.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I just love to kind of wrap all that up in a way. Jennifer Love Hewitt saved you.
Yeah.
If we can take anything away from
this. I do owe her a debt. You know what's funny? We that song debuted on Funny or Die, and they sent it to her. Like, they wanted, because we were going to do this whole thing where I was like her stalker, and she did like a live kind of telecast to kind of talk about it. And then like I break in through a back window while that's going on. Yeah. Like, we were going to like an April Fool's Day, and she was not into it at all.
Oh. So,
but I hope that I think she probably has heard that song, because I know they tweeted it at her too when the video came out.
Mm-hmm.
But it was taking, you know, her career is, I talk about like Ghost Whisper. I updated it a little bit, but we talk about, like, I Know What You Did Last Summer and all the, you know, Party of Five and stuff. So it was using that career. She's got a meaty right. career, you know.
Yeah.
Role she's been in
early way
Trojan War, yeah, that's, it's like House Arrest, Sister Act 2, Can't Hardly Wait for the Trojan War, Jennifer, I Love You type thing.
Nice.
But yeah, I do owe it, and I probably made a lot of money off her playing that song as well. So not a lot, but a few grand probably. Yeah, so nice. I owe her a debt.
Yeah,
Jennifer, if you're listening, I apologize for Chad. That was a dark summer in my life. It was satire. I was going after big ideas. Right. But yeah, she did, man. God bless her. Anyone that talks bad about her, come see me.
She's been a delight on the new season of 911.
Oh, that's right. She's a dispatcher.
Which is my new guilty pleasure. I love that show so fucking much.
No way.
It looked like the most cliche Fox show of just absurd situations and everything yeah. else. But somehow they actually pack some heart into it. And I think it's just Angela Bassett's a great actress. Oh, Peter yeah. Krause is really good.
Hell yeah, man.
But yeah, she came on in season two as a dispatcher, and she's been a delight. Real quick, it's funny because I have a similar story to yours. The context was different, as it was at an art school where I ended up going to college, but it was a summer program for high schoolers.
Uh-huh.
And it was basically, it was like 7 weeks of filmmaking. It was awesome. We yeah. lived on campus. We each got to make a movie. It was really cool. So this was the first summer there. The last night of camp, my roommate and I snuck out to go to a TA party, which was college students. And we're like, fuck yeah. Like, yeah. this is amazing.
Yeah.
The TAs had kind of embraced us or whatever. And I think they felt guilty. And I ended up being a TA there years later. And so I definitely didn't make this mistake. Yeah. But I could understand, just like, it feels nice to feel cool. You know, like these high schoolers just admire you. So we snuck out. And of course, they did a room inspection that night. Like, the guy, you know, the RA in the dorm. And we weren't there. And we were at this party. We ran out and then were picked up by a student or by a college student and then driven to the party. And it was just like, you know, we felt like we were in Mission Impossible or something, like sprinting across the campus to get in this busted up car. And then we were at the party, drinking a couple beers, feeling cool. And then one of the TAs got a call, like, are Joe and Spencer with you? They were like, no. And then that was, they were like, look, we're going to drop you off like half a mile from campus.
Yeah, right.
Walk back. And then, you know, we were supposed to not say anything and just say no. And we get back and like, and it's so, at that age, you just, authority, you just don't know what is in their power or not.
Yeah.
You know? And so we get back and they demand to give us a breathalyzer. And we were like, okay, you know? So we do a breathalyzer and I get, and this was the last night of camp. So like my parents had already driven down from Ohio to North Carolina. We were going to, like, the camp ends at 11 a.m. I failed the breathalyzer. I just ratted out. I'm just a complete, like, yeah, I was at the party and I was just a complete douchebag.
You didn't know any better. You're scared for your life, you know?
Yeah. And And so they call my parents at 3 a.m. or whatever, and they're like, pick him up now. And it's like, no. And that's the one funny thing hearing you talk about it, is that that's when the authority figure does get a dose of reality, where yeah. it's like, you may rule over these children, but like, you can't just demand an adult come and pick up their kid at 4 a.m.
Yeah, no.
It's like, no. No. So instead of 11, they kicked us out at 8 a.m. instead. So we just like missed like breakfast or something.
Yeah.
But, and there was also a girl that I was super, it was like my first kiss had been with her earlier
oh.
that night.
Oh.
And like we were playing, like it was.
You were riding high too.
I was so riding high. I'm like, yes, this is the life. And, but I was also super awkward as soon as like my parents got like she found out what happened. And so she came down and wanted to like see me. And then I was just awkward because my parents were there and like I didn't go out to see her. And then like as I'm like leaving with my parents, she like gives me a note, like a handwritten note about like how much she cares about me.
When you get out, stuff. Look me up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah. I ended up going to college there, and she was a couple years younger than me. So she was like, they have a high school program there too. So it's not encouraged that you intermingle.
Yeah.
I was a freshman. She was a senior. We went out once and like kissed goodnight, and then I just never talked to her again.
Dang.
Which I regret because she was cool.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. I mean, I was always getting into stuff like that. Just, I was part, we had an ambassadors program in high school that was like the non, you know, like the alcohol free group.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I got busted at a party and like.
Couldn't be in that.
You know, yeah, it was like the parents were out of town. They got home early, the classic scenario. And like everybody hid. I was in a closet. And then like this, my friend's dad came in and was like, everybody okay? And I was like, yes, sir. And then I just vomited all over his shoes yeah. and passed out.
Dude, you ever, speaking of partying, did you ever have like those parents? Now that I look back, I think it's kind of weird and creepy, but you always had that friend whose parents were cool with drinking. They're like, yeah, come over, get wasted here. You
yeah.
know? Now I look back and I'm like, I don't think, especially with, I mean, if a kid were to leave, even the next morning, get in an accident yeah. and it's your fault, like you'd be in some major trouble, but.
You're asking for a lot of problems.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, the kids are going to drink, but if you give them a safe place to do it, they're going to drink more. You
know? Right.
They're
exactly.
Like yeah. I'm like running a gun and like trying to like bribe like people 3 years older than me to buy right. booze and stuff.
Yeah.
Like I got a place to go. Shit. Like I'm all right. We got a destination. We just got to get the booze to get there. So
exactly.
I think about that. Yeah. I don't think if I ever have kids, like I'm probably not going to be super strict. I'll be older, first of all. So I probably don't give any more shits, but, but yeah, you got to let your kids breathe a little bit. But then once they do some stupid shit, like what me and you did, you got to hit them over the head. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely. Okay. Now you went too far. Cool guy. But yeah. And I think a lot of that too comes from maybe, I don't know if you're the same way, but I just wanted to be like liked. I wanted to be,
yeah.
I wanted to be, you know, like a, not the center of attention, but I wanted to like, you know, have people see me and have good thoughts mm-hmm. and, you know, be like, oh, that's Serino. He's a good time. He plays guitar. He's cool.
Yeah, he's a good time.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That
so,
was me.
So going out of your way to do that sometimes yes. will get you in trouble too. Like, hey, climb that thing. You
okay.
know, right? Yeah.
Like, yeah. I was definitely the monkey for a lot of people, you know, yeah. just cause I was so, such a terrible middle school experience. And then like most people, I think, but then, yeah, I went to a high school like where I didn't know anybody. I knew like three people. So it was like a chance to start over. And I was like I also tried out for the basketball team. Mm-hmm. However, I was so bad that the night that, you know, the coach would bring each person in one at a time and let them know if they made the team or not. The kids who didn't make the team would get like a packet on like how to improve your shot. And the coach, when it was my turn, sat me down and said, you will never play basketball on this court. However, we love your enthusiasm. Would you be a student coach?
Yeah, there you go.
And, you know, I didn't know anybody. And so I got to be the student coach for the varsity team. And so that was like, that was really where I had my first beers because they would take me out to a parties with a bunch of seniors.
You were the buddy. You're the yeah. buddy. Yeah.
And I was just the one that they got, hey, look at Flanders. So I also yeah. had no first name in
yeah.
all of high school.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that's where it really started for me. So I'm being embraced and I'm drinking alcohol to be embraced. Okay, I'll just drink.
Yeah.
And I just went, yeah, my craziest drinking years were definitely in high school. And then I kind of calmed down and now I hardly ever. But yeah, it was definitely just like wanting to be the fun guy, you know, and I was. Yeah. And it was fun. And then, you know. I mean, I could talk about this for hours, but basically there was a night where I woke up at a morning. I woke up at a Hummer dealership missing my shoes and my cell phone and having no recollection of how I got there. And then I was like, okay, all right.
Yeah. A little too far there.
This is, I'm playing with fire here.
Well, you know, like we're in that kind of the drinking corridor. Like there's that Illinois, Ohio, Michigan, yep. Indiana. I got a joke for you. You know, they say about Ohio, it's like Illinois with more DUIs. but yeah, dude, if there would have been like, you know, stuff to do, I would have done it.
Yeah.
It wasn't. Right. So that time, like, you know, we would have parties in the cornfields and do a bonfire. Right. And, you know, that's what we did. Like we didn't, there was nothing else really going on unless you had one of those, you know, quote unquote, cool parents that right. let you light a bonfire in their backyard and, you know, hang out there. But yeah, I think, yeah, it's so much like that youthful exuberance and also feeling like you're confined, you know, if you're in like a rural, even in the city area too.
Right. Cause I was in
rural.
Columbus, yeah, but yeah. still, so I didn't even have that excuse. I was,
but it's like, that's what everybody does. Like, yeah. And it feels like it tastes like freedom. You know, yeah. I mean, when I got that 12 yes. pack in my car or my buddies and me get a 30 pack and we, you know, go to a kegger in the middle of the cornfield, it felt like, man, you know, we can do whatever. Like, you know, no one's here to tell us what to do.
Exactly.
We're drinking.
And my first beers were High Lifes, which was just the champagne of beers. Yeah. It just felt so good.
Yeah. That's like, not a bad intro
yeah,
one.
It beer, really is. Yeah. Yeah. It could have been the Milwaukee's Bastards, you know, like whatever.
Well, yeah, I drink a lot of Best Ice. Milwaukee's Best Ice was $4.99 for a 12 pack.
There you go. Yeah.
And then I drink like a 12 pack and then go to the bar. Like it was gross. God. That was in college though. Sure. Yeah, we would do, I ended up doing stand up for Budweiser. It's a fluke thing, which is actually kind of a bad story. Cause I got the job after a bunch of like interviews and they brought me in a few different times to talk on the phone, talk to people, all this different stuff. They interviewed, like they said, 500 people applied for this gig, but it was basically a one man, 45 minute show for Budweiser. And when they interviewed me, they're like, do you drink Budweiser normally? I'm like, ma'am, I could have this job for 10 years and you'd probably break even. Like I'm the Budweiser I bought, you know, versus what you're paying me. So I got the gig. I show up in St. Louis and there's another guy there that also was promised the gig.
Oh,
so it became a competition between us for a month. Like we would like take tests, clean out the like shuffle out the lager tanks and stuff.
What?
Yeah. Like photo op type stuff. We'd have to memorize it. We wrote this thing. Originally, it was just going to be, I think, writing it. And then they're like, yeah, you can perform it too. And Budweiser liked him and the agency liked me. So they brought us both in as like a month long thing. I ended up winning. And then also this guy is more talented than me, but it was based off a Rob Riggle standup called Lager Lessons Live. So I looked more like Rob Riggle, I think is what it came down to. So having that background in partying, being it did serve me well for that gig, but I always, and I'm just not that I'm like, I don't look forward to things. I don't get my hopes up, but I'm very much like even keel. Like,
right.
Even like I'll pitch a TV show. It goes great. Everyone else is suicide. I'm like, wait till not even until you get the check in your hand, till it clears.
Yes.
Like that's
exactly.
when you can.
I'm the same way.
I used to be like, I think maybe it's that bastard upbringing, but I was like, I want to make a movie that lasts 100 years. Like I want to make something that, and then I kind of realized later in life is that, art is really about enriching the lives of people like today. Like right. it's not about a legacy or anything like that. It's like, I want, if you have a rough day, I want you to be able to come home and you can put on one of my videos and laugh for a few minutes. You know, I think there's a lot of kind of power in that and not like a power over people, but it's like a powerful thing you can do to make right. someone's day better.
Definitely.
That's the way I try to make the world, I guess, a better, more lighthearted place through comedy and storytelling.
You and me both.
Hell yeah, man.
So if you've watched or listened, then hopefully we made your day a little better.
Yeah, a little.
A little. Yeah. Well, where can people watch your videos?
Oh, man. Well, let's see. You can always go to jasonserino.com. That's where I kind of keep my hub, all the stuff I got going on. I'm also posting Friends stuff, too. So I'll put like this podcast up.
And, oh, cool.
I'm hosting a show right now. EP hosts a show called Kill Your Content, where I convince YouTubers to stop making videos and live their lives.
Nice.
If you're in hypocrisy. I guess having a show about telling other people to having a show about that is ironic, but me doing it is hypocritical.
Right.
It's one of the things we explore. That's on Amazon Prime and also on YouTube. Dads and Parks playing in theaters. You can find that at facebook.com/dadsandparks. I'm doing a top secret project with a big YouTuber that I can't talk about, but it's a she.
Oh.
And I'll say that, I can't say anything about that, but that'll be coming out. Yeah, it's good. She's really cool. I wasn't sure, you know, because we've been around YouTubers and you know, they can, she's a really cool girl. She's from the Midwest. Definitely a huge following and I'm excited to tell a story with her. And then what else? That's pretty much it. I'm getting ready just to pitch TV stuff. So I'm going to be focusing on non stuff that doesn't hit the screen right. for the next couple of months. And that'll probably, if all goes well, we'll go in development and you'll still never see it. So
terrific. yeah.
One of the shows I just got off the road with some, the Micro Wrestling Federation.
Cool.
So we were trying to package something together. Then there's little people that wrestle, and a lot of people go in with, like, you know, ideas about it. Like, you know, not, they're all not even wrestling fans. They're kind of going for the spectacle, but these guys are high flying, dude. Like, one of the coolest shows I've ever seen in my life. So I just got off the road with them. They're opening up a new venue on the 19th in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
Cool.
So I might try to fly down there and hang out with those guys, because they're a wild bunch.
I bet.
So yeah. I did an East Coast swing and a West Coast swing with them, which was fun to kind of go on the road and live in a big Winnebago for a little while. But yeah, man, I'm just out here doing, trying to tell good stories and have good times. Not as good as we used to, but
sure. Well, thank you for taking the time.
Hell yeah, man.
To come over and talk about it.
I didn't even use a lot of my notes. I'm proud of myself. I a little bit, but yeah, I covered it all.
I think you covered it. I feel good. You
break,
feel good?
Break for Joe to tear up here. I think you might have missed that one. My bad.
Well, thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me, brother. Appreciate it. Always a pleasure.
Always.
That was the episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks again to Jason for coming on. And just a reminder, go to jasonsereno.com to see all the stuff he's got going on. You can watch the series Kill Your Content on Amazon, which he talked about, where he just tells YouTubers to stop making stuff. and then you can find Dads at Parks on Facebook. And at movie theaters. So get there a little early and check that out. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. I know that I did. Give me that 5-star rating on the iTunes. Let's get to 70 before next week. That would be just swell. That's all I've got for this week. So until next Wednesday, keep laughing.